This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We're back, and joining us on the line is Harlan Pierce, owner of Harlan's Louisiana Fish and chairman of the Gulf Seafood Institute. Harlan Pierce, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Noel.
Harlan, I know that you're going to be able to give us the numbers as to what this occurrence has actually caused for the fishing industry in this area. I mean, it seems to be really devastating on so many fronts.
Well, it is, of course, this isn't our first rodeo, Newell.
Yeah.
Just a different bull we're riding this time.
Yeah.
That's all. It seems to be throwing bigger ones at us all the time. But, but we've been through a lot of stuff from Katrina, Rita, Gutafike, Osco, and all. But this one was just a basic freshwater event, and the hurricane that came through really didn't add to that as much, except in some areas of the state. It kind of, in some cases, it flushed the water out, and maybe with the south winds may help us turn some of this freshwater problem around, with the spillway hopefully closing in a week or so. That would help. But right now, the problem is that we just have no help for our oyster guys on the east side of the river. You know that. They're gone.
Right.
88% of the wild reef over there is history, and even the private reefs are all dead. They're pretty much history. The west side's okay. Shrimp were down. In the brown side, we were down about 50% statewide. In brown, Pontchartrain was 80%, and then all the way to the west in Calcasieu was 86% down in brown shrimp. And when it came to the whites that we normally catch, we were 96% down in the Vermilion Basin, and that they got hit the hardest. Those guys got pounded on stuff like that. So those things are there, and then, of course, crabs and shrimp. It's just not good. Too much fresh water like that without that salt water coming in to help move those product in. Hurts us, and a lot of these fish and stuff, they move offshore and they come back in when the things are right. So hopefully we'll see some sort of a strong thing, particularly shrimp. The white shrimp like fresh water, so they were kind of pretty strong before they closed the season up, and then of course Barry might have changed that a little bit and stirred that water up a little differently, but hopefully we can see a little bit of rebound with the white. But we're not sure about that till they open the season in 2-3 weeks from now, whenever they do that.
But, so when we think about just specifically in the oyster industry, especially on the east side, what are the long-term implications of that? You have a bed that's completely destroyed. How long does it take to recapture and redevelop the bed?
In correct conditions, 3 years probably. Probably 3 years to bring that back to fruition where it was, to finish it up. But the problem is, what exactly is happening on the east side? The degradation of our environment is really a bigger problem, or a big problem there. And is the environment still conducive to the development of the oysters the way they used to be? Do they have the food for the oysters? Can the spat develop? In some cases, the spat wasn't setting for a while. So that's to be determined in the future is how this really is going to work out. But in ideal conditions, when we reset stone and stuff down there and trying to restart the whole process again, it's a good 3-year situation to get them to the size we need to have them. So we're a long ways off on the east side for sure, if we get the environment correct.
And so when you think about it in those, and I didn't realize it was that long of a term, is there any indicators like at the 12-month mark or the 18 or 24-month mark that give you some idea that you're on a successful path for return?
Oh, sure. The oyster will be growing. And on these private reefs, they're constantly moving them, trying to do some different things with them. And, of course, the public reef, they're checking them. Yeah, there'll be indicators. You'll be able to see the growth or no growth of that of the oysters in those areas. Area 3, which is on the west side, is one of the hot spots when it comes to people at the oyster bars. They like Area 3. So
right, they're good oysters.
Oh, yeah, they're good oysters. That's right.
So, even I know that one.
Yeah. So those guys over there really need to get back in shape and in good. But they'll be able to monitor it and see what's going on and see where we are. But, again, it just depends upon the environment. The environment is correct, and we should be okay with that for 3 years from now. The The good thing is that we got a west side of the river that's not bad right now. We ironically lost some oyster beds on the west side to freshwater, but that was unusual. Actually, there's freshwater on the west side, but those areas are still okay right now, and a lot of them. You know, they really are.
And Barry probably did do some help in that respect.
Oh, yeah, it definitely did. If you look at Calcasieu and areas right there, the people in like Hackberry place over there, they weren't catching anything. There was no shrimp. There was nothing. Barry did it in like a light switch flip. They started catching a few more crabs. They started catching fish again. They started doing some things. So that heavy south winds that came in, pushing some of that salt water in, kind of helped stabilize that. And, you know, these storms like Barry's like flushing the toilet sometimes. You're flushing out some of the bad situations and try to restabilize the environment to where it needs to be for the proper production and of the seafood, you know. There's no doubt about that.
What about the crab industry? Where are we there?
Crab guys, the worst news is, again, Pontchartrain 60% off, and Vermilion, which has been hit hardest, is 78% off. But statewide, we're probably, I would have to say, about 50% down as a rule. 40-50% down on the state on crab, but they're just starting to catch them again now. You know, we've had a rough year on crabs, and that's just the fresh water. But even before that, we had some rough years. We had closures to kind of protect the female crabs, which slowed them down again. And then came the fresh water. Then things started to turn around that way to get things done. Soft crabs seemed like they got strong. You know, they really did. Before Barry, the soft crabs were coming in heavily, but finally. But now it's slowed down again. We've got to get out and find our traps and get everything set up again to get it started again.
So when we were talking to Guy McGinnis, he was giving us some values that the Department of Commerce looks at. And are those matrix that they use, is that predominantly designed as kind of looking at agricultural products as opposed to really fisheries?
Well, you got two different... Some of them look at it as poundage. Some of them look at it as dollar values.
Right.
I think agriculture dollar. And basically, it's dockside value. So it's right. Not the value at the restaurant level or the value, you know, that's a whole supply chain. Look, everything is
dockside. But which is the most appropriate way to kind of...
I think poundage.
That's what I was thinking.
You know, you skew the results when you start looking at dockside values. Let's say you're catching 100 pounds a day, but, oh, this next 3 months you caught 10 pounds. So the price goes up. So,
yeah, but
you know,
but also, doesn't it also, like, in for example, in the crab market, you know, there are a lot of crabs sold in the Chesapeake Basin. And if they have an off year, they import more from us, right?
Yeah, they always import from us, whether
right,
it's off year or not.
But they always do. But, I mean, in their real off years, they're importing more.
Yeah, they are.
And that affects the dock price. So it's really
definitely.
It's really not, you know, and I think the yield is really where we ought to be more than the value.
Right. I'm with you. Like, for instance, dockside number one crabs are $5.
Yeah.
And that's outrageous. I mean, it's high, way too high. And but that's because of lack of supply that's brought that up. So the value skews it to me. It doesn't. How many did you land? How many people? And the other thing is this. How many people were fishing? The thing that bothers me the most about our fishery right now is the grain of the fleet. There is no longer a pathway for youth to get into the fishing business because of regulatory regimes. You name it, there's all sorts of reasons they can't really get into the fishery. 10, 12 years ago, the average age of a fisherman was 40. Now it's 10 years long. 10, 12 years is 10 or 12 years older now, 50, 52. We just don't have the fishermen. So part of the situation is everything we're talking about here today, but to me, the real deep thought is where the fishermen are going to come from and how are we going to open the door to get them in the door. We've regulated gear to such a extent they can't really get out to catch the fish. We've regulated fisheries where, you know, and I'm not saying that red drum, speckled trout, we got a 1 million-pound speckled trout quarter, we can't catch it.
Yeah.
Got rod and reel only.
Yeah.
And no nights, no weekends. You know?
Harlan, we got to get to a break. When we come back, we have a couple of folks that want to ask you some questions. You up for that?
Good. All right. I'm ready.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We have Harlan Pierce. He's the chairman of the Gulf Seafood Institute. We'll be right back. We're back with Harlan Pierce, chairman of the Gulf Seafood Institute, as well as Harlan's Louisiana Fish. And Harlan, let's go to the talk line. Let's go to Steve. What say you, Steve?
Hey, I went to the University of Delaware marine biology school for 2 summers. And I'm just wondering why, especially in the lake where we're bringing in all this water, we know how many gallons of water are going through the spillway. Why can't we add salt in several different locations? We know what the selenium level in the lake at different spots along the lake is supposed to be. Why can't we put boats or barges out there putting our Louisiana salt back into the water and bringing it up? You may not bring it up to the levels of what it is, but at least it would not maybe kill the oysters and the crabs.
You know, I would think that part of the problem is how to stabilize it. How would you get the salinity levels that level out across anywhere? You're going to have hot spots of too much salt, and you're going to still have the other. So I understand your logic and your thought process. I just don't think it's doable in the body of water the size of Lake Pontchartrain or Lake Bourne. I think it's a good thought process and maybe something to explore, but I think it'd be very doubtful that it would help us. It might even hurt.
Well, how would I explore that? I mean, who would I go see?
I would talk to LSU Food Science in Baton Rouge, or LSU Sea Grant in Baton Rouge. LSU Sea Grant could probably help you work through that, and then see what you can do there. But that would take a really monumental task. You know, I think you'd get too many hot spots with salt, and you may just have more problems than you started with in the first place.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for the call, though.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve. Harlan, one of the other questions that come that on the text line is, can you talk about why Vermilion, in many respects, was worse off than some of the areas on the southeasternmost corner of the state?
It's a good question, because Vermilion, you know, even with Black Drum, it was off 63% on Black Drum production for this period of time. You know, and Calcasieu was down some too, but there in the center of the state, they had a lot of fresh water coming down, and it just seemed like that water kept coming and coming through the Chafalaya, through the basin there,
right,
and kept filling them up. And not only that, they got the double whammy. Those are the one people that got hurt worse with Barry. They got as high as 9-foot surges over there.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the docks in that area were pretty much wiped out, pretty dramatically wiped out. You know, friends of mine were running for their lives over there. They'd never seen anything like that. But so I just think that a Chafalaya basin is so big and so broad. And you got to remember, the Mississippi River is channelized. Boom, it's going in one direction. That Chafalaya spreads out pretty good,
yeah,
over that whole territory, which is not a bad thing. It really isn't. I mean, if the river was running wild, our estuary would be in a whole lot better position as far as I'm concerned. But that's story for another day.
The old river structure, that diverts Mississippi River water not through the Chafalaya, correct?
Right, no. It's
so that's
down.
That's its own, it takes its own pathway.
Takes its own pathway, which is close to the Chafalaya, but
right,
it would come straight on down. And then, again, that structure is so scary to open, you may never close it. I mean, it's just so old. And I think part of the problem, reason they didn't want to open it, is they were worried about they could close it.
Right.
Last time they opened it, I think, if you stood on it, it felt like the whole thing was shaking so bad, you know, you just know if it would stay in one piece. But so it's scary, and the river wants to go that way. I mean, it wants to take that natural path and go through that particular area, but we're just holding it off right now, you know. So, and some other things I think you need to talk about too, Newell's. I mean, people are concerned about the algae in the water and all the things we did with the fresh water. And we go back, we all go back to Katrina and Rita and Gustav and all that stuff when New Orleans was supposed to be dumping toxic soup into the Lake Pontchartrain back into Lake Bourne. And we did 250,000 tests on seafood, and never a negative test, never. Fish, shrimp, crabs metabolize things very quickly or get out of harm's way. They can move, and they do move and get going. Oysters, I'm afraid, are stuck. But you really don't have that problem with a lot of the seafoods that we have. You know, we've been through this many times. The oil spill, look at the oil spill.
Yeah, absolutely.
They moved out of harm's way. So I wouldn't be worried about it as much. And, you know, sometimes the media tends to hype things too much, and
yeah,
in this case, I think they do, and they just haven't been where we've been for the last 10 or 12 years.
Well, that's why I have you on, because I know where I can get the best information available from the best folks that are living it day in and day out. You've been
right
in the trenches for years.
Right,
so
that's correct. And it, you know, it's just, I still remember when they came down from Katrina and what, this toxic soup's gonna kill everybody, and that's the first comment out of their mouth.
Yeah.
And we proved them wrong,
yeah,
with a bunch of tests. So
absolutely. Right. Harlan Pierce, thank you so much for
joining us.
We really appreciate it.
Same here.
Be right back, folks. Stay with us. Let's go to David on line one. What say you, David?
How you doing, Mr. Knowles?
I'm doing great.
Thanks for having me on. Yes, sir. I just wanted to make the point that, you know, I keep hearing about the freshwater intrusion. I'm a commercial crab fisherman. I make my living at Lake Pontchartrain. And it is not fresh water that is in that lake. It is polluted runoff water. And, you know, you're going to have callers that keep calling with misinformation thinking they can dump salt in the lake and solve our problems. And that all comes from that statement. It is not fresh water. It is not freshwater intrusion. It is polluted runoff water. And I think it's being misrepresented. You know, right now on the show, presently, and with all the news outlets, and it needs to be called what it is. You know, it really does.
In many respects, you're right. I mean, the fact of the matter is, it has a lot of foreign substances in there that we don't traditionally see in Lake Pontchartrain, right?
Yes, sir. I mean, I work 7 days a week. When I get home from work, and I just got off the boat, when I get home, I clean myself with HEPA cleanse.
David, I got to get to a break. Thanks for calling.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.